The title of the talk this afternoon is Coming to Power. Can you hear in the back? The first time I came to Bodh Gaya and went to the temple in town, I remember finding such a great relief when I got to the tree in the middle of that kind of forest of sharp, hard, pointy things. It was a great spreading tree. And I would stand by the tree. Sometimes I found myself very strangely just standing on one leg by the tree with one leg bent up. And later I saw sculptures of trees with the tree deity shown, and they would stand like that. I have no idea why I did that, but I did. I was young enough to do that, to do what I felt like doing. There weren't quite so many thousands of people walking around at the time. And many times I've thought about the Buddha's life as well and how many great things happened to him under trees. Especially the turning point in his practice where he realized he couldn't just copy what other people were doing. And he really had to feel what was right for him, what called his heart, and actually do that and nothing other than that. And so if we want to copy him, maybe we should copy that part of his life, sitting under trees, rather than other things that he did. Or at least in addition to other things he did. There's something about the shape of trees. I find it really speaks of generosity of life. That spreading that's happening invisibly underground and also visibly above the ground. Just spreading and spreading. Receptive and giving at the same time. So maybe that's part of what inspired Buddhaji to wake up. On the other hand, maybe we should look at our very strong tendency to want to follow, just to copy what he and others have done. Even in this room today, how often we may look around and compare and feel that we should be doing what someone else is doing. Or maybe they should be doing what I'm doing, depending on the personality. We know a lot about following because it seems to me that we're afraid of finding this kind of creative edge that life has and learning how to ride on that, how to live in that open way that that creativity can come through us. Does that make any sense so far? Mm-hmm. I want to leave you with lots of questions, but I also want you at least to understand something of what I'm trying to say, not just that you didn't understand my words. But the words are meant to confuse and disturb and bring questions. So many times we look at the lives of other people and we think, I want that. And then we copy some irrelevant part of their life, like some gesture that was made or some posture. Or in the Christian tradition, sometimes we're tempted to follow the death part and get on the cross instead of the deathless part. And that's basically what we seem to do with our role models. We're not only following and copying, but we usually copy the wrong part. The part that's not bringing us aliveness. So in this room, I would like to start with the question of just what are you practicing? Not what technique, but what are you confirming and empowering in this room, in your being, in your mind, and in your being? And just to notice if we're empowering imitation or if we're empowering originality, if we're empowering defensiveness or discovery. So even if there would be defensiveness going on, there's a possibility of empowering or practicing discovery, discovering what is defensiveness. Or there's a possibility of noticing defensiveness and getting more defensive. Well, it's not my fault. Someone taught me to be this way, for example. Or don't look at me like that. I'm doing my best. Or whatever. How often do we practice worry? And how often do we practice or empower wonder in this day? So just noticing how easy it is that we, even when we're trying to do something new, we're trying to be open. As we said the first night, trying to be simple. But how much of the day is actually just empowering the same old predictable reactions? And do we have any clue how to do something other than that? The first step would be to see how much is predictable that's going on in my experience. How much is repetitive? And what would allow me to be that honest? To see how 99.9% is repetitive. If not the exact same thought, that thought and its opposite is about as creative as we get. I'm doing great, I'm doing terrible. I like that person, I hate that person. Whatever. So what about a world where strange things might happen at any time? Strange things that could be called or seen as miracles, or could be called or seen as just ordinary life happening. But actually life happening, not practicing deadening. What would help us, without fighting our experience, and without giving up, find some way that has enough power to let strange things happen? Strange things like the life being transformed. Strange things like wisdom just bubbling up into the mind out of nowhere. Strange things like honesty. Being able to see what's happening in myself. And to be more interested in that than in what someone else is doing. Very strange indeed. How could it be without just replacing one kind of rigid way of living with another rigidity? So not just saying, okay, my life has been about practicing anger against myself, so I'm going to enforce something else. I'm going to enforce I should be kind to myself. If that works at all, it works for a very short time. And then it backfires. So we need a different kind of power that's not about fighting. If we just try to fight the same fight, we will lose. Even if we think we're winning. As soon as we think we're winning, maybe. So one miracle that's very ordinary that we could look to for inspiration in the experience of a tree. How the tree knows how to drink stone. I saw only one eyebrow went up, almost. I think it's pretty amazing. But maybe because I'm in love with trees, so excuse me for talking about my love affair with trees. The way that trees drink stone and then allow water to flies. So in a normal tree, whatever that is, maybe just one of these trees, tens of thousands of liters of water are flying out of the tree every day on a normal day. Just imagine how heavy that is. When I put my 1 liter of water bottle in my day pack, like, oh, it's enough. It's enough to fill the day pack. So tens of thousands of those liter water bottles are flying in the air from each tree every day. Really? It's pretty weird. And what that might symbolize in our own inner experience may be equally weird. What kind of possibility that points to or exposes. So I think the image of the tree and the way it drinks and gives the water every day is a very rich image, and I don't want to limit it too much. But one way of playing with it, I would like to suggest, playing with this image of the drinking tree and the flying water. Have you ever seen the bare roots of a tree? Anyone? And what is your first impression? When a tree has, part of a tree root has just come up out of the ground by whatever accident. Anyone? Vulnerable. Yeah. That was my feeling too. Very pale and very exposed. Because their job is to be exposed. That's what the root is all about. To have as much exposure as possible. As much vulnerable, exposed, pale surface area in contact with the earth as possible. And I see this as our capacity, our sensitivity, our capacity to receive experience. We're so sensitive. Of course, we have built all of these defenses. On top of that sensitivity. We have never been told what to do with all of that sensitivity, how to be intelligent with all of that sensitivity. But it is there, as far as I can see. Not only even physically so exposed we are without fur or claws or scales or fangs. But inside, so much more exposed, how one word can shatter a life. So vulnerable. So what needs to happen with that capacity, that sensitivity? If we can find, to start with, a rich, supportive environment, the way the tree goes into the earth, the way the roots have their intelligence, finding what they need. In this, part of what I mean when I see roots in contact with earth, so our sensitivity in contact with our experience, part of what I mean is our capacity to see through what I know about the flower, to the flower. To see through the name, even. So that I even see through the form of the flower itself to something unlimited, posing as something limited. To see through what I know about that person, or what I think I know about that person, to that person, and then through that person to something beyond that person, through that limited to the unlimited, So the roots of the tree reach into the earth, but the earth itself is not alone enough. There needs to be water. There needs to be a fluidity to help us reach inside our experience, to hear the song going on inside the stones, the ear of the person next to you, the carpet, the door of the bathroom that you're staring at, holding your pee, hoping the person will hurry up. That color. In this way, the specific is a doorway and is a way that we can drink what we need from our experience and leave behind what we don't need. The specific as an expression of the unlimited. There's a lovely poem by Rumi, among many, lived in the 13th century. And he said, "You are song, a wished for song." So that's you, who are listening, are a song. And that song is wished for. Go through the ear to the center, where sky is, where wind, where silent knowing. Put seeds and cover them. Blades will sprout where you do your work. Go through the ear to the center where sky is. This is how we could listen to sound. Go through the ear to the center where wind, where silent knowing. And having gone in planting seeds, having planted seeds, covering them. And then he doesn't mention, because he is like Mr. Fluidity, but don't forget the water. Having planted the seed of what I feel called to be, to live. Covering them, not armoring them, covering them, and then finding water, finding a way of being fluidity. Not being so sure, in other words. Not being so sure and not being so should. Being willing to go with my best guess in the moment. Being willing to drop those great elaborate plans that I had made. And feeling in the moment what feels appropriate. Coming into this moment, what comes to mind is another thing that trees have that helps them drink stones. And it's a really, really weird, I think it's a really, really weird thing. In a forest, underground, so weird that the scientists still don't really know how it works or what it is. But they call it some kind of fungus. but it's a fungus that extends throughout the whole floor of the forest, connecting all the trees underground. There's something like that that happens in this room. Something really weird, like a fungus, that's stretching through the room underground and connecting all of us trees. And it doesn't also, because it's underground, it doesn't really know where the room stops or where the monastery stops. It just keeps spreading as long as it finds trees and roots. Roots that are drinking. Roots that are looking for these strange things that sometimes happen in life. And so this fungus helps to break the stone down so that the trees can drink what they need to drink. So that the stone and what was solid and heavy dissolves and turns into trees. So we spoke the first night, or rather I spoke the first night, about shit and compost. So this fungus helps the shit turn to compost and then turn into tree. One specific thing that I would like to say as part of this fungal experience is sometimes when we feel the worst, on those moments where we're sure it's the worst moment of our lives that happen every few weeks, if we would just, for what about 10 seconds? If we could give 10 seconds. So here comes the worst moment again. Open your eyes for 10 seconds. And just honestly look at any person who happens to be passing by or sitting next to you or lying next to you or walking next to you, whatever. And just honestly ask if you really think they've never had that moment. And just see what that does for your shit day. What kind of flow might go on. There are many other weird things about the fungus, but I'm going to leave it for you to go underground and feel it. Because I saw that you didn't really believe me about the water flying, so much less will you believe me about the fungus. If it's physically true, it might be possible in some invisible way. So just being open for that kind of help, that kind of spongy help. The other thing that helps a tree to drink is another pretty strange thing. So this is another thing that helps us be unpredictable, be alive. So we have experience and we have sensitivity and we have fungus. We have other people who are also willing to dig down into their experience, who really want to take their experience deeply in, who really start to see that the obstacle is the path, that we need our wounds in order to drink stone and let water fly. The tree is made of nothing other than things that have died, including its own leaves, and rock, and water, and sun, etc. And without the tree, the stone doesn't dissolve and the water doesn't fly. So there's a way that we are needed. Our actual messy experience is very much needed. When we can start to see the unlimited within that shit, we start to leave some room for being uplifted. So we stop knowing so much, maybe. We start admitting unknowing. It's part of the fluidity. We start letting our experience in. And our sensitivity gets more subtle. We can feel even more exposed and at the same time enriched, strong. Rumi also spoke about the song of life in us, and he said, let your throat song be clear and strong enough to make an emperor fall, receptive, we could say, or begging, if you like, at your door. What does that mean? That it could be possible for someone who has the regular kind of power to recognize another kind of power working. And even an emperor in worldly power, knowing he or she has nothing in the face of this lifting up, in the face of these strange things that keep happening. So sometimes in meditation, we actually may feel a sense of lightness, even physically. And other times, it's more like we take the difficult more lightly. We start to hear the singing not only in the stones, not only in our feet when we're walking, not only in the breath, but even in worry, even in defensiveness. We start to hear a song. The song starts to move us. This is where it would be easy to say, this is a little too weird for me, I'm going to go back to whatever I used to do. Maybe go back to my hard practice. Maybe go back to my cave. Maybe go back to counting, measuring and weighing my practice. But it could be questionable, at least, whether hard practice, whether heavy practice, is higher, is more advanced, or is even more powerful. If I do a powerful practice, is it really more powerful? If I use a lot of willpower, is that powerful enough? Is it the right kind of power? Does it have any root at all? If we notice in our own experience that a word and a thought, which are more subtle than action. We notice that the word and the thought, or the belief, or the assumption, or the expectation, is what is behind all of our powerful actions, all behind all the powerful actions in the world, belief or thought. The word of a leader saying fire. I have a friend who works for a city government in India. And part of his job is, if there's violence going on in the city, or potential violence going on in the city, he has to go there and be the one to tell the police to fire or not fire. They have the guns, but they're not allowed to fire without his word. So wouldn't it be interesting to find the power of that kind of word on a more subtle level in our experience? What about trusting and going into the subtle as more powerful, potentially, than just doing actions? How is it that the water is lifted up through the trees? Partly by getting thinner and thinner, more and more subtle, and being willing to be magnetized by some help. So sometimes people say that there is help for us raining down all the time and bubbling up all the time. And how could we find some receptivity to that? How could we be magnetized towards that help? One little clue, and then a few more clues. One of my friends who has a library of, I don't know how many thousands of books, I think it's maybe 15,000, that he actually shipped from Canada to India. He told me that the root, the Latin root of the word intelligence, is idleness, not doing too much. Maybe not doing anything. So we're trying to transform our experience of power and intelligence. And we're trying to bring intelligence and power together. Sometimes it would feel like that would be the first time that's ever happened in the human history. It isn't, but sometimes it feels that way these days. When we see models of how power is used, usually we want to turn away from power completely, because power is usually misused. And even trying to fight that misuse of power often ends up being more misuse of power, more violence. Maybe there's another way, as the Buddha said in his turning point in his practice. Maybe not just following along and copying the self-torture practices that others have done. Maybe there's another way. Maybe intelligence comes out of doing very, very little. And then that one word is more powerful than 1,000 actions. Maybe. In our meditation practice, it's good to know that we would easily have a tendency to go back to what felt more solid, what felt more substantial, what felt more, we call it, real. We would go towards the posture or the gesture of the Buddha rather than his willingness to look into things and see the truth of life, life that includes death. So one of my friends talks about the brick and the feather. So I want to give a few little tricks. And it's the brick, the lick, and the slick trick. So the brick. Sometimes we have something difficult going on, whether it's pain in the body or pain in the emotional life or pain in the thinking. And we feel frustrated and we work with it and we struggle. And then it stops happening. And we complain. Nothing's happening. When you hear yourself saying, nothing is happening, could I ask you for more than 10 seconds, please, this time? Could we start to step a little bit out of our time frame? could we start to be open to just a transition from carrying a brick around to no longer finding the brick on my hand and saying, oh, I have nothing. And eventually, after more than 10 seconds probably, we find that we do have a feather in our hand and we can feel it and it has a kind of a weight. And then we go along and then the feather is gone. And we say, oh, I have nothing, nothing's happening. What's wrong with me? I should go back to my hard practices. Just noticing our attraction towards the heaviness that we struggle with. Our need for something solid to make us feel what we call, what we understand as real. And just to notice, if there's not a brick, it doesn't mean necessarily that nothing's happening. That's the brick. The lick. This is my very weird way of explaining something, so just bear with me. When I was about 6 years old, I had a crush on this guy. I liked this guy, boy. And he said, if you put your tongue on that metal bar in the playground, it will stick to the metal because it's so cold today. And because I liked him, I had to say, no, it won't. And stick my tongue on the cold bar. Very clean, I'm sure, on the playground outside. And my tongue stuck to the cold bar. And I couldn't even really scream for help. Because I was stuck with my mouth open and my tongue frozen. It seems to me that this is what we do all day. As much as possible with all of our experience. We're having experience, and the experience is already fine without our help. It's already what it is. But we kind of want to prove something. And so we stick our tongue out. And we get stuck. So it's like, here I am and the breath is going on. But I want to make sure that I'm sure that I'm sure the breath is going on. I already felt the breath, but now I need to reconfirm that I did feel the breath or hear that sound or whatever. So it's like a two-year-old going around experiencing things but needing to experience them again. Maybe we don't need that much information. Maybe we could reserve our specially sensitive capacity for the appropriate moment. And just to see how deadening it is when there's already experience and then I make my own version of that, as one friend calls it. And then I relate to my version of my life. And then suddenly it's not just experience, it's not just coolness or warmth on the skin. It's all about me. And then we're stuck. And we can't even ask for help. We're so stuck. What if we recognize that the experience already happened? And our explanation or description or just marking the experience. Not only doesn't add to the experience, but actually disconnects me from the experience. And how freeing life could be without the lick. How much room for joy. How much room for seeing that even if something in my experience is going on that I don't like, fear, anger, confusion, loneliness, whatever, it's not only all about me. It's not only something I did wrong. It's just experience also. Sometimes it allows a huge amount of relaxation that can let us also tap into something deeper than these deep emotions. And to let that be stretched very fine, very subtle. There may be less demand towards life, and therefore much more energy to do the little that needs to be done in the right time, in the right context. So already we start to get a sense of another kind of power. And as we start to sense this other kind of power that happens in openness, as we start to see through my idea about the stone to what was going on there before I called it stone, what is going on there, even as I call it stone. Or hand, or thought, or whatever experience. In that openness and seeing through my version of experience. Sometimes there's a sense of how much openness is going on. And we freak out. So this is the slick trick. Slick is like tricky, so you can just call it tricky trick if you want. So much openness that we can't stand it. And so we make up excuses about how all that openness is not all that great. So for example, feeling very open and noticing a sense of being exposed and vulnerable, feeling the power of life there, the potential, because things are not programmed there in that openness. Things are not predictable there in that openness. Things are not aggressive in the usual way or in any way. And still there's power. Bigger than who I thought I was. And so we say, I no longer feel the beauty of just the stone as it is, the hand as it is, the sound as it is. It feels meaningless now. This is one version of the slick trick. If we really check, what happened before the statement, this is all meaningless now? There was a closing down. The limited said, the unlimited is too much. Which is true. It's too much. Thank goodness. It's way too much. It's way too much water to go through one tree in a single day. Way too much potential love and potential wisdom to go through little old me in 1 minute. As we get more subtle, time stops making sense. By the way. So what about being comfortable being uncomfortable? Being exposed, feeling the power, agreeing, yes, too much. And seeing what happens next. So in the tree, we've only gone so far as the water going up the tree. But then there is this amazing moment that I can't even quite visualize how it would be. There's a leaf, and there's water in the leaf, and we can see the leaf, but we can't see the water leaving the leaf. But the water does just cross through the skin of the leaf and is no longer even liquid anymore. Fluidity expands into flying. And what could that moment be for us? For our so-called inner life, where we pull our experience so in and so fine. Our experience is pulled into us. And our subtlety and sensitivity is so fine that we can receive it. And then something unexpected happens. The fluidity that we love turns into something else. The fluidity that is love becomes bigger even than any love we ever heard of. And fills the sky. And so there's this visible thing, a tree. There's our practice, something that we can say we do. There's a human being with pain and power, beauty and potential. And there are things that happen that we can describe, and then they lead to something indescribable. Something so generous, it just gives to the sky of all people. Gives everything that we worked so hard to pull up into ourselves, into our core, and gives it all away without a thought of giving. The tree is needed, and the generosity of life that happens is invisible. Happens unself-consciously. So we're practicing being conscious of ourselves. And then, luckily, we find natural escape from self-consciousness, from being too much involved in all about me. And then that invisible generosity happens, that expansiveness happens, and that's not all, because then the clouds form and the rains come, and our being here starts to be invisibly part of all of that help that's raining down all the time and bubbling up all the time. Not as me helping. What a trap. Not as me helping. The hardest trap to get out of is me helping. Such a small generosity, me helping. We are needed, but not in the way we planned. Each of us is needed, but not in the way we imagined. If we allow our heaviness to be dissolved into fluidity, and our fluidity to be expansive, and our expansive to give everything for no reason other than nowhere else to go, nothing else to do. Why not? Crossing into a completely unknown realm. Water becomes spice. This could be an original model of power that those who wish to follow can follow. For those who are followers, let them follow a different model of power. For those who want to find this leading edge, where we open and let the leading edge of creativity come through us. Originality. You can just keep the questions in mind. Am I trusting something? Am I empowering something? Or am I trusting, am I empowering nothing, no thing? As the water crosses the membrane and just gives itself. Trusting no thing. Empowering no thing. Giving rain, giving help to everything. I want to end with a poem by Rilke. Where we can feel also the intimacy of limited, unlimited together. I find you there in all these things. I care for you like a brother. A seed you nestle, which would be like a puppy nestling into the sand. A seed you nestle into the smallest of them. And in the huge ones, you spread yourself hugely. Such is the amazing play of the powers. They give themselves so willingly. Swelling in the roots, thinning as the trunks rise. And in the high leaves, resurrection, coming back to life. May all beings feel the song of life moving in them, moving them, and moving beyond them. So we have time now for any posture you wish to enjoy the evening, the changing light. Simplicity of human being on the planet.